If you love Survivor and you're feeling down, David Bloomberg will turn it around. He'll break down the rules and he'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. This is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Hello and welcome to Why Rourke Lost, our weekly discussion about why each player was voted out of Survivor. I'm David Bloomberg, and joining me is the woman who slithered through the sand in her own Survivor season, Jessica Lewis.
Aw, you really had to remind everybody about that moment in my existence. Yes, I did slither through the sand, and it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I was drowning and dying at the same time.
Oh, that's bad. At least you didn't have to push balls uphill, did you?
No, thank God. And it's one of those horrible challenges that I just really feel like Survivor is already hard enough, but then they're going to humiliate you at the same time, making you be tied at your ankles and your wrists and slithering up sand. Like, I was literally sucking sand in my nose and was drowning. And so it was one of those moments in my life where I was like, I'm dying right now, like on national television, I'm about to die. So not a good look for me, not a good look for anybody who's in that challenge. So props to people that can do it well. I really have some respect for you. But Ryan and I, we can hang out because we're not so good. Not so good.
The restraints this time looked like they were a little looser. And
yes.
when I was talking to Adam at Reno, he mentioned when we saw the preview, he said, well, I hope they took my suggestion that they make them softer and looser and whatever. And he had shown me the scars that he had on his legs.
Yes, I have scars on both of my legs and my wrists from those restraints. If people think that they're playing out there and making things easy, they're really not. And that, like, I have the same exact scars. He actually had a really, really, really bad injury on his leg. I just said really like 10 times, but the mark that Adam ended up with on his leg was horrific. They were definitely very tight. And even my mother noticed that the restraints were more loose this time than when we did it. So I think maybe they realized they injured all of us. So maybe they should switch that up a little bit.
Well, live and learn, I guess.
Yeah.
Just bad luck for you.
Yes. But at least I must say this, that was one of that challenge leading up to it. I had a really fun conversation with Jeff Probst before it started. So at least I can take that away from that challenge that I had a really, he just happened to be standing next to where I was before I started the challenge. And I was able to actually talk with him just about the challenge in a weird way. It was quite fun. That was my favorite moment of that challenge. The rest of it was horrible. Anyway, moving on.
Moving on. Okay. So before we start discussing this episode, we need to talk about two things. First, I want to let listeners know we have a special bonus at the end of this podcast when we will talk about why the winner of Australian Survivor 2 won. We've gotten a number of requests for this, and we'll do a run through hitting the high points for the winner of this great Survivor season.
It was amazing.
Yeah, and we will go into it after we make our predictions for next episode. So for anyone who hasn't seen that season, but who intends to, if you don't want to be spoiled, we will give you a warning before we start into it. And then you can just, you know, click this podcast off at that point. So we'll let you know. The other item I wanted to mention is the announcement, although Rob hinted at it for you. Both of us will be at Know It Alls Live in New York City in about a week and a half.
Yay! Very excited.
Me too. Getting to New York Know It Alls is something I've been wanting to do for several seasons now, but every time I said I was definitely going to do it, something else unavoidable came up. But this time, nothing came up. I'm actually going to be able to make it.
That's awesome. I've never been, so I'm very excited about having an opportunity to go. And it will be a lot of fun to be there with you because we'll get to actually watch the show together. And I'll get to embarrass you with funny photos and look for those on Twitter. So that'll be fun.
Great.
I know you're looking forward to it.
All right. So with those announcements made, we can get into this episode. And, you know, I have to admit, I find it just a little humorous that last week you were so excited at the possibility of my winner pick getting voted out. And then this week, well, look at what happened. It was your winner pick who got the vote.
And this is God messing with me. He's getting me back saying, Jessica, you were a little, you know, snarky last week, laughing at David just a little too much. So we're going to rein it in and we're going to make you realize that you're really wrong. Because at least you weren't even wrong, David. You're Desi's still in. My girl's out. So, yeah, I apologize for being a little cocky last week, I guess. But
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't repeat the content of the text you sent me when I asked you to confirm my memory of who your winner pick was.
Yeah, I won't because it's not PG, so I won't say that.
No, PG's not on this season.
Yes, well, this one is, yeah, PG's not, but what I wrote was definitely not PG.
Okay.
So.
As for our predictions specifically for this episode, well, we got the tribe right anyway.
We did.
But we thought the lone healer would again be the swing vote. And she was trying, but of course, obviously, she ended up being the target instead.
Yeah. And you know what I have to say? Neither one of us, I think, really looked at the physicality of all of the tribes when we were making our JP assessment and thinking he was going to go home. Because really, he's it when it comes to strength. I mean, the other people are okay, but he's the muscle. And obviously, the other tribes have more muscle than this new tribe has. And he actually even referenced it in one of the secret scenes I saw where he was pretty adamant that, yeah, they need me. They need me because I'm the strongest one. So I think we missed that read when we were making our assessments last week. So I was kind of frustrated that I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about it. And, you know, as far as JP saying they need me, that's probably about as deep as his strategic thinking goes.
Oh, my word. Did you see the secret scene with JP?
Oh, yes. We could just the most cliche JP that JP could be.
He seems like a nice guy, but it's almost funny to watch him because he is like a character of himself. It's very, very interesting. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens there. I do think that there was the possibility that he could have gone in a different circumstance because not everybody always looks at strength and weakness, despite my appendix. We'll get to that later, I think.
Yes.
As for Rourke, in her final words, she said, "I'm not going to blame it on being swapped. I always think there's something someone can do, and evidently I didn't do it. I own that." Now, I was very excited to hear Rourke say this because it's something I say all the time. Mm-hmm. As a number of people, I think you included, mentioned to me on Twitter. But then after Rourke saw it all play out on TV, and now she knows why Ryan made the choice he did, she has somewhat walked that back in interviews, saying there really wasn't much she could have done when she swapped into that specific situation.
Yes, I think that it was really interesting that she, I want to like put myself in Rourke's place watching that episode because she clearly had no idea about the super idol. So she was learning about all of this as we were all watching the episode. And it probably really infuriated her as someone who loves the game and has kind of studied the game and is a super fan to then realize that her going out of the game was not anything what she necessarily thought it was. There was some other things at play that she had no idea about. So I think that would have been an interesting thing to watch with her, just to see her having that realization in that moment.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, you know, not only couldn't we watch with her, but we barely got to watch her.
We're
a little hampered by how little we saw of her, which, you know, I'm sad about because I did want to see her play. But, well, this is where we come in and, you know, ask the question, was there anything more she could have done? Let's figure out why Rourke lost.
Yes.
Now, once again, before we start discussing the rules, I want to remind people that if they want to read all the rules, all the examples, everything that's in there, they can do so at robhasawebsite.com/survivor rules. With that said, we'll start off, as always, with the first rule, which says to scheme and plot. How do you think your winner pick did here?
Oh, thank you for reminding me again. I think that she had fantastic potential to do great in this regard, because she was actually scheming and plotting, which we didn't see during the episodes because, like you said, we didn't see much of Rourke. But what she was talking about in her exit interviews was actually quite fascinating, with the ideas that she was coming up with throwing a challenge. She didn't want to be going into a merge with six healers. So there was definitely a lot of pieces to her mind that were working. She was working very hard on Cole to try to get him to throw a challenge with her. But then she had this crazy plan that she wanted to pull off if they were to go to tribal council to blindside Cole. So I was really quite fascinated listening to all of her ideas. And I'm sad that we didn't get to see them, because I think if she had actually been able to execute a blindside of Cole in the fashion that she described, it would have been an amazing TV moment. But we didn't get to see it. So, you know, that's the unfortunate thing. So I do think that there was scheming and plotting going on, but she just, that wasn't part of her story, I guess, for the season. And so we never really got to see much of it.
Yeah, I agree. I do think it would have been hysterical to see her convince Cole to throw a challenge and then Cole get blindsided.
Right.
Although I just have this feeling that somehow, because it was such a convoluted plan, that Cole would have said something, because he can't keep a secret, that would have ended up accidentally saving himself, although that wouldn't have been his intention.
Yes, and that's the problem, too, is that Cole does keep running his mouth. So I don't know how well her plan would have played out. But I think that her mindset going into the game was definitely very savvy, and she understood the nuances of the game, and she understood the social components of the game. And, you know, it was sad that we really didn't see much of that. But that would have been a great moment if it had worked, if she had actually pulled it off.
That's right. We can tackle that Survivor Cole blindside fan fiction at a later date.
I know. That would have been fun, though.
So that was, you know, what was going on before the swap. And then it seemed to me like after the swap, she continued to make allies, at least partially. She said that from the moment after the swap, she and Allie started talking to each other, and then, you know, that she got along with Allie and Ryan the best because they were forthcoming with their game information and included her in game conversations, which is good for her, good for them. The question then becomes one of why she didn't also try to work with Chrissy and JP. From her interviews, the answer seems to be that Chrissy immediately suggested voting out Rourke, which Allie passed along. In her words, once she knew Chrissy was coming for her, she didn't have a use for Chrissy if Chrissy didn't have a use for her.
Yeah. And that's where I think she kind of messed up by immediately discounting Chrissy, because clearly if someone's coming for you, I understand totally wanting to then go after that individual. But she did mention in her exit interviews that she should have approached Chrissy differently, that was one of the things that she kind of regrets, is that she didn't talk to Chrissy and say, listen, we're both going after each other. OK, but can we get past one vote? Can we try to work together just for this one time and make it further together? And then we'll deal with each other later. And she wishes that she had that conversation. So again, she's in the moment. She's not realizing that. Obviously, she's realizing that now. Maybe that would have changed things, but I don't think it would have with Chrissy, just because Chrissy's very proud of herself and the game that she's playing. And I think she saw Rourke as someone who had the possibility to play a very, very strategic game. And I know this is going to lead us into a different rule, we don't need to talk about it now, but that's where Rourke became a threat to Chrissy. And so I think that Chrissy saw Rourke for what she could be, the potential that she had in this game being a strategic player. And Chrissy couldn't have that working against her. She's already got Ryan, but Ryan is working with Chrissy in a different fashion. And so I think that it was going to be a tough, tough uphill battle for Warp to get Chrissy on her side.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking the same thing, you know, what Rourke had said. You know, I do wonder if, you know, what they could have done together, because it seems to me that they would have had to convince, I'm sorry, she would have had to convince Chrissy to turn on JP, which seems unlikely, or convince JP to turn on Chrissy, which also seems unlikely. And she even told Josh that she doesn't know if JP would have ever done it. But she also said JP was moldable, manageable, and workable. It just doesn't seem like she worked on that aspect too hard because she believed she had the necessary allies.
Right.
And then, you know, the other option, of course, would have been to turn on Allie, which would probably not have made sense given the information she knew. But one thing about her not talking to Chrissy, and obviously, you know, Chrissy pointed out at Tribal Council, it's a two-way street, and, you know, Rourke should have gotten past what Allie told her and tried to strategize with Chrissy, like you said. And that's bad on Chrissy for waiting. But if Rourke heard this information from Allie about Chrissy, how did she know whether or not Allie was telling her the truth? I mean, it seems like, okay, in reality, she was. But let's put that aside for a moment and put ourselves in the position that Rourke was. And wouldn't it be the perfect strategy at a swap, when there's one swing vote, to go to them and say, hey, the other side is targeting you?
Right. Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, it's such a good strategy. That's exactly what Joe did with Devin the previous week.
Right. Yes.
Now, why didn't Devin believe Joe? Because he and Ashley talked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he talked to Ashley and they worked it out and realized, no, Joe was lying. Now, in this case, it doesn't seem like Allie was lying. But again, Rourke had no way of knowing because she never went to, you know, bounce ideas off of Chrissy. And I'm not saying anyone's mind would have changed, but this is not a game where you can just trust one person, especially one you just met.
Right. And the interesting thing, too, about JP is that there's a couple of things there with JP. I read somewhere, I know, like, you want to hold back a laugh there. I read
a couple of things like that.
Yeah, a couple of things like that. That's right. That JP, somewhere, I think Rourke mentioned that he had found out that she had kind of described him as what was the word you used? Malleable, I think was what
malleable,
they said.
Malleable, moldable.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that kind of offended JP. I think she missed a huge opportunity by utilizing JP, because look at how easy Chrissy swayed JP. It took her like one sentence, and all it was Rourke wants to do an all-girls alliance. And he was like, oh, she's got to go. And that's it. Yeah. So yes, JP, I'm sorry, but clearly you are malleable, because if that's all it takes is one line to get you to immediately change and shift and start, you know, agree to vote out someone who you weren't even looking to vote out. And that's the thing. It's not even like there was a should I, I'm not sure kind of conversation. It was immediate that he changed his mind and said, okay, I'm going to vote out Rourke. And if Rourke realized that in JP, she probably could have utilized that to her benefit and tried to use him. And I don't know if he necessarily would have been completely against voting Chrissy out, because I mean, JP is obviously, we're still trying to figure out what kind of game he's playing, but you know, he might have been willing to go with Rourke and not necessarily stay with Chrissy, depending upon what Rourke's one-liner would have been to JP. You know, I mean, it's quite possible she could have done the same thing.
Yeah, trying to figure out what game JP is playing. I'm going to go with tic-tac-toe. I don't know.
The other thing, too, that I have to mention, just in response to what you had said, is that Rourke had another issue that she wasn't even aware of, in addition to the super idol, but also she had Ryan, because in one of the secret scenes, Chrissy actually says in an interview that Ryan told her that Allie and Rourke want to vote her out. So Ryan is the one that went to Chrissy and said, they're looking to vote you out. So Ryan was definitely playing both sides. And for someone like Rourke, who thought Ryan was on her side, well, he's now going to the person that you want to vote out, and he's telling that person. So clearly he's already picked his side by going and sharing that information with Chrissy. So that obviously builds more trust between Chrissy and Ryan, because she's looking at Ryan as someone who's protecting her in multiple fashions. But now she's also being told secrets that are coming from these three individuals that appear to be working together.
Right. And, you know, you say that Ryan was secretly working with Chrissy, but this leads me to the one regret that Rourke has mentioned in interviews, is that she noticed that while she was sleeping with Allie each night, mm-hmm. Ryan was sleeping with Chrissy and JP. And she knew that Ryan and Allie were supposedly super close, so she wondered about the sleeping arrangement, which has historically been an indicator of allies mm-hmm. to sharp-eyed survivor players. So I guess in your season, everybody was an ally with Cece's butt, according to one of your favorite memories in that article.
Let me tell you, it was emanating some serious heat. I don't know why, but yes, that night, everybody wanted to be an ally with her butt.
but anyway, she realized this, but she didn't quite get to the point of taking that next step and figuring out, okay, why is this happening? What's the problem here? Mm. Now, once again, to her credit, she now sees that she should have taken the step. If she had pointed it out to Allie, and maybe Allie said, huh, that is odd, and you know, maybe spoken to Ryan, it's possible that Ryan would have been put back on his heels enough to make a change. We'll never know for sure.
Right. I'm still struggling. I know we're not talking about Ryan, we're talking about Rourke, but I'm really struggling with Ryan's decision. And I've gone back and forth in my head, and I've like tried to do the numbers, who's coming with who, emerge, and who's bringing who to the table. I don't know if he made the right choice or not. I'm still struggling. Like I go back and forth with that one a lot, probably too, because I wanted Rourke to stay in the game.
Well, yeah, yeah.
So,
I do think Rourke had the makings of a good schemer and plotter, but sometimes even a good strategist can get out schemed when it comes to this rule. And, you know, Rourke told Rob in his interview with her that Ryan played the situation perfectly. He mm-hmm. acted sad that he was the supposed target of Chrissy and JP, made Allie and Rourke feel like everything was okay. And we saw in Tribal Council when Rourke said she was as comfortable then as she had been beforehand. And Rourke also talked about how Ryan and Chrissy did a great job of hiding the fact that they were working together.
Except the sleeping thing. But
except the sleeping thing, right.
Yeah. So it is. I mean, Ryan, he did a great job. He did an absolutely fantastic job playing Rourke extremely well. And that's partly why I'm upset with Ryan. Sorry, Ryan, but Rourke was my pick. Damn it. Anyway.
All right. So we will close the books on rule one and move on to the second rule, which I don't really think we have anything to talk about, because I didn't see Rourke scheming and plotting too much or doing anything else, you know, bad relating to this rule. Did you?
No. And I do think it's funny that she said in her day after video that it was almost like she'd been sent to camp and then she got expelled. She even said, she's like, I didn't get to play the game like I wanted to. So certainly there wasn't too much scheming and plotting going on if she doesn't even feel like she played the game.
Right. All right. Then we'll quickly jump to the third rule, which tells players they need to be flexible. And I think Rourke knew this was important. And we saw in an episode 4 web confessional that Allie talked about how Rourke was a great host and was extremely flexible as everyone came to the former healer's camp. And then Rourke herself said she went out of her way, again, using those words, to be welcoming and flexible.
Mm-hmm. And she was also, she seemed very willing to play with different individuals. I know that, again, I'm going to go back to the Cole fan fiction, you know, in order to pull that off and have him blindsided. And that was someone who she had a relationship with. So I feel like she was willing to be very flexible and move forward in the game with people that were going to help her game. So, yeah, I think she did. I think she did a fine job being flexible, other than not wanting to try to foster a relationship with Chrissy. And that might have been where she needed to work on her flexibility. Even though she was welcoming, bringing them into camp, she clearly didn't have any one-on-one conversations with Chrissy until they were going to tribal council.
Yeah, that's the one. The one negative that I have as well is the issue with Chrissy. I do want to bring up one more positive, where she said in a web confessional that her plan was going to be, and she specifically said, staying flexible in tribal council in case someone slipped up there, which is a good idea. But, you know, I say this all the time, that most flexibility doesn't really happen at tribal council anywhere.
Yeah.
And so it didn't really matter. Plus, of course, Chrissy and Ryan both stayed on point during their discussions, so Rourke never saw it coming.
I did think it was interesting, though, how the entire tribal council, at least what we saw, was very, I hate to use the word salty, but they really like were going after each other. And I was surprised that it came out so quickly. Like, they both kind of came out swinging like right away. I thought that was rather interesting between she and Chrissy.
Yeah, they definitely did. And from what I saw in interviews, there was, you know, more than that even. So they were definitely taking shots at each other there. All right. Now we move on to the fourth rule, which tells players not to let their emotions control them, which is kind of funny since we were just talking about them being salty at each other. Yes. In tribal council. But other than that, which didn't change anything, I can't think of anything that was problematic for Rourke here.
No, I really can't either. She seemed very pleasant in what we did see. And she didn't have any blowups or anything. You know, and even though, if you go back to she and Joe with the food thing, because there was a couple of people who in confessionals did say how Rourke was really annoyed with Joe because Rourke had been cooking and Joe was complaining because the frittatas or whatever they were not cooked. I can't remember what they were eating, but there was something very strange and it wasn't cooked properly. And Rourke was apparently very annoyed, but she apparently didn't let that get in the way of her playing with Joe and even wanting to play the game with Joe because he was so loyal. So I thought that was an interesting bit that she controlled that.
Yeah, definitely. So we will then again move on to the fifth rule, which tells players to pretend to be nice and play the social game. Now, we already talked about how she was welcoming to her new tribe mates after the swap. You just talked about how she could still, you know, pretend to be nice to Joe, even if she was mad at him about throwing away food. And she also said she tried to be easygoing and friendly, building relationships first. All of these are, you know, of course, good signs for survivor players. Did you see any issues here?
No, I think that she even said in one of her interviews that, you know, she tried to be easygoing, friendly. I tried to build friendships first. And she knew she needed to bond with people, and she stood by that strategy and what she did in creating those relationships. And I thought it was quite interesting that she was talking about how people were bonding over lying to each other, even though they didn't realize they were lying to each other. But they were, I think it was Allie and Ryan actually bonded with each other because they both said they went to community college, which neither one of them actually did. So, you know, it's so survivor's a crazy world. So if you've got something in common with someone, clearly you can use that to your advantage. But the fact that she was very open about herself, she didn't lie about herself. And also, that brings me to Joe. I think that she had a very interesting relationship with Joe where, you know, Joe thought she was a lawyer. And so she wasn't trying to hide anything about herself and she wasn't a lawyer, but Joe just thought
Right. She's going to be.
Right. But, you know, that Joe recognized that in her too. So I don't think that she hid too much about herself, which might have been part of her demise, which, you know, we'll get to. But yeah. So I think that she was definitely playing the social game and she was making connections with people. And she also talked about Mike, how close of a connection she had made with Mike, and that she was almost like Mike's therapist, it sounded like, at some point. So, you know, good for her in recognizing that, too.
It's funny when you said Mike for a minute, I went, Mike. Oh, Dr. Mike. You
know, I know, Dr. Mike. Yes.
Yeah. maybe she solved his problem of his pants falling down. If you saw that secret scene where he was running around.
Oh, I missed that one. Really?
Yeah. It was before he had found the idol. He was hunting. And instead, he found a wasp's nest where he got stung 4 times and his pants kept falling down enough that he was getting the blur.
Oh, my gosh. I missed that one. I'm going to need to find that because that sounds funny.
So you mentioned, that we would be getting to something related to, what she was telling people, what they found out about her. And I suspect you're talking about the sixth rule, which is where we're headed now. And it warns players against being too much of a threat. So take the floor.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. The fact that Joe was calling her Roe Dagger, I thought was pretty interesting. I mean, he apparently told her, I'm pretty sure you have a computer up there, not a human brain. You're a robot. You're so smart. You know, these were all the things that Joe was recognizing in Rourke. And we all know as Survivor fans that if you're pegged as being really smart, then you're going to be probably seen as strategic, and then you're going to be seen as a threat. So even though we didn't really get to see a whole lot between her and Joe, clearly there was some people on the Healers tribe recognizing Rourke and what she had going on in the, in the tank, if you will. But then you also had Chrissy, who recognized that as well. And even though I know we heard Chrissy said, apparently, right away when they landed on the beach together, Rourke's got to go. But I think that Chrissy had enough time to spend with Rourke that she did realize that she was extremely similar. And I think that at some point Chrissy even told Rourke Rourke, you remind me so much of myself. That was one of the things that Chrissy had actually said to her. And if Chrissy recognizes that she's a strategic person, that she's an intelligent woman, and that she has this calculating mind, and she sees that in Rourke is definitely going to be a threat to Chrissy. And I think that was one of the key reasons why Chrissy wrote Rourke off so quickly, because she knew that Rourke was someone who was going to play the game very similar to the way she was playing the game. And in Chrissy's world, that's not going to jive with her game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, everything you said, I would have said as well. She saw her as a younger version. And of course, if you as a player think you're pretty smart and you see someone who's just like you, well, heck, I got to get rid of that person. But I don't think it was just limited to Chrissy, because I think that Rourke did a good job of hiding the level of her Survivor game knowledge in her original Healers tribe, because she had made a comment that it was not valued among the Healers, or at least didn't seem to be. But Ryan knew that Rourke was a super fan like himself, and the two of them talked about it, once they got to the swap. I think he could have considered this to be somewhat threatening, because while super fans may bond over their enjoyment of Survivor, I would say it can also raise a red flag, because they may not like the competition. So again, when Ryan was, looking at his options and he saw Rourke there being this type of threat, I think that may have been one reason he sided against her as well.
And that's quite possible. And I could use someone like David Wright as an example, because Rourke actually talks about David Wright in a lot of her interviews and his strategic gameplay. One of the first conversations I had with David, he told me this whole story about his cousin being a huge Survivor fan, like his little cousin, and that he applied for the show because his little cousin was a really big fan and that he didn't really know anything about Survivor. So he had this whole backstory already prepared. And this was a guy who not only did he love the game, he printed up 3D puzzles in his apartment so he could practice the puzzles that they have on Survivor. I mean, this is how intense he was going into it. But when he got out there, he didn't let anybody know that he was a super fan or that he was so into Survivor as he truly was. And so, yes, I do think that can come back and bite you. And someone like Ryan, who is also a fan, and she clearly didn't hide it, now that you mention it, because I think Alan, in his pregame thoughts on Rourke with Josh Wiggler, he actually called her out as the second super fan. So she clearly must have been emanating something, because Alan even saw it in her.
Well, sometimes you can just guess and be right. I mean, if you look around, you know, I mean, let's face it. If you looked at Ryan, you're going, well, he's not here for his physical strength.
Right.
You know, so what is he here for? Probably his brain.
Yes.
Unless, of course, you know, Ryan, in case you're listening, unless, of course, this was a beauty tribe situation, then undoubtedly he would have been there.
Undoubtedly. Yes.
I think that definitely Rourke was seen as a threat by, well, at least two of the main people who were important voters on this tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Rule 7, this one talks about how to get and use idols and advantages. Unfortunately for Rourke, she didn't have either, because Joe and Cole found the idol and she was the lone healer to go back to her own camp. So she didn't even have the opportunity to use knowledge of that find to search elsewhere like Dr. Mike and Jessica did at their camp. So we don't really have anything to say here, I don't think.
No, other than her shock and awe with the super idol.
Right.
Yeah, there's really not much to say.
Okay.
I just want to know, has Joe looked for the idol at his new camp?
Well, that is the question of all questions. No one seems to know the answer.
I know. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, Joe's joked about it, among many other things, on Twitter.
Yes,
but
yes, he has.
I don't know. Everybody's wondering the same thing. It's like it appears to have been in the same location for Dr. Mike to find it.
Right.
So why has Joe not gone looking there? Nobody knows.
That's crazy. Crazy. And I guess we'll find out soon enough.
At some point. Moving to Appendix A, which, of course, talks about how people should vote, you know, to further their own game. The question might come up as to why Ryan or Chrissy was not targeted, since both of them hurt the tribe on the recent challenges. But Rourke herself said in one interview that Chrissy was probably the best puzzle person on Survivor. And more importantly, this appendix notes that keeping an alliance partner is always more important. And that's exactly what Ryan and Chrissy themselves were doing when they made their choice. Also, last week I mentioned that the players know the merge is coming soon, and the trend has been to start targeting stronger players earlier. In this case, Rourke was strong in terms of her potential ability to organize others and potentially pull Allie away from Ryan towards the rest of the healers. Ryan certainly didn't want that, and I guess was willing to risk alienating Allie. I'm thinking he's probably figuring he has a better chance of reeling her back in, getting her back to his side, if Allie doesn't have another side to go to.
That's where I was when I was looking at the numbers, is that as far as who's coming with who, Allie doesn't really bring anyone to the table, because Lauren is kind of out there, but I don't think that Allie and Lauren had a real close bond. They seem to get along just fine, but it's not like something that Ryan has with Devin. That, you know, Ryan and Devin are going to get back together, and what Chrissy has with Ben. So, you know, Chrissy and Ben are going to get back together. And so I think Ryan probably went through all of these options and all of these numbers to try to see, where am I going to end up if I have Rourke and Allie versus Chrissy and Allie. But still, he's absolutely alienated himself from Allie. And I feel if he had voted out, and I realize I'm going off on a tangent, but Chrissy might not have had a negative effect on his game coming up, whereas I feel like Allie may, because Allie's going to be angry. And that's something that we're going to get to watch next week.
Yeah, and it'll just be a question of how angry she is. You know, is it a situation where she's been working with Ryan long enough that she can forgive him and she can say, okay, I guess there was a good reason. Is Ryan going to tell her the good reason? You know, she may still be upset that he didn't tell her ahead of time. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how that discussion takes place.
Yes.
And whether she can trust him going forward, or is just going to trust him long enough to find a way to stab him in the back later.
That's what I'm worried about, because she did say in that tribal council that this is where you show your loyalty. This is where you actually prove who you're going to be working with when you go and vote. And I thought it was an interesting component of her tribal council remarks, because what was Ryan doing in that moment? He had, and she actually used him as an example, that she and Ryan had voted together, that, you know, this was an opportunity for them to, I think, show Rourke that, yeah, we're going to work with you. And Rourke hadn't had an opportunity to do that yet because she had gone to tribal council. So I think that this is going to stick with Allie. I really do. I don't think Allie's going to let this go. I think she's going to be upset.
All right.
Sorry, Rourke. So, we're talking about Allie and Ryan here. But yeah. Anyway.
So before I sum up my conclusions, do you have any other final thoughts about Rourke?
I do. I have a few here that I've. Okay. That I need to mention because she was my girl. So I thought it was interesting that on her day after video, she did say that no matter what you do, you can't escape who you are, and you can't escape people's impressions of who you are. You can't control your narrative of yourself. And I think that although the super idol did come into play, and that was part of Rourke's demise, and that there was already a relationship created between two people that she had no idea that that relationship had been created. But I think that Rourke's true colors were coming through. We discussed it. I think that Chrissy and Ryan both saw the potential that she brought to the game. And I do think that she was someone that was to be feared in the game. And I'm not just saying that because I picked her as my winner pick. I picked her as my winner pick. And I'm going to explain this to you, because she was so unassuming when you looked at her. And when I first was going through the cast assessments and looking at individuals, she's very unassuming. And if you look at what people said about her pregame, there was a lot of comments like, she seems really sweet. She seems a little insecure. She's not bold in her movements. She's quiet. She's awkward. She seems out of place. She seems mousy, shy. She's hunched over. She's not confident in herself. She doesn't command a room. There were very few people that actually picked up on her. I think Joe and Devin and Alan were the only three people that really picked up on her. Ryan kind of did, too. He wanted to play with her. But I loved the way that Alan described her. He said, if you've got a lens on a camera, she's not going to be in focus, but she's right there. And that's what I think really describes Rourke. I think that she could have played this game exceptionally well if she'd had an opportunity to play it. But unfortunately, the super idol occurred, and I have to do this. I have to steal from Stephen Fishback, because this was so amazing when he said this, and then I will be done with my thoughts. But he said, a butterfly flaps its wings in Jeff Probst's house. He dreams up the super idol, and Rourke is eliminated. A tiny change dramatically impacts the entire season, which I thought was rather telling. It was the butterfly effect. So there we are. Those are my thoughts.
All right. Well, I would say it can't be denied that the swap combined with the secret advantage linking Ryan and Chrissy definitely put Rourke into a bad position. But I have to go back to Rourke's own words, although admittedly before she knew about the link, where she said, I always think there's something someone can do, and evidently I didn't do it. In this case, there were probably fewer things than most people who claim to have been screwed by the swap could have done. But there were still a couple that might have changed the outcome. And it doesn't involve killing that butterfly in Jeff Brooks' house. Rourke should have put aside what Allie told her about Chrissy and tried to reach out to her. She also could have tried to convince JP to break with his hero ally. She could have acted on her thoughts about the sleeping arrangements. Or she could have made it more difficult to tell that she's a smart and strategic player. It's possible that none of these things would have worked, because while Rourke found herself in an unfavorable situation, Ryan and Chrissy found themselves in a great one, and they played it well without giving it all away. Rourke wanted to work with Ryan, and I suspect in another situation, Ryan would have wanted to work with Rourke. But Ryan was forced to make a decision about which ally was better for him. He chose Chrissy. Sometimes you get out schemed, And even just a few small things you woulda, coulda, shoulda done loom larger. And that is why Rourke lost.
There we are.
All right. So now that we are wrapping up that episode, it is time to move into predictions for the next episode.
Ugh. Can I just not have to do this ever again? I'm so bad at it.
Well, luckily so am I. So
yeah.
Looking at the preview, the commercial and preview for, you know, the most recent one that CBS put out.
Yeah, it was crazy. Was it the crazy one? Yeah.
Yeah. Cole is featured heavily, almost all Cole. And there's nothing good about it for him. He seems to be eating extra food, feels like it's perfectly reasonable for him to do so. Ben does not seem to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then even though Cole is doing this, we see him appear to pass out.
He looks like he dies. I mean, it's like he goes down so hard. That was crazy.
I'm going to predict he doesn't die.
I don't think he dies since he's all over Twitter with peanut butter on his face. So,
well, hey, you know, that could be someone else.
It's his twin.
Photoshop is great.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, I've seen ones with contestants who shoot lasers out of their eyes.
You know, I've seen those too. Yeah. It's very impressive.
But so all of this would seem to suggest Cole is the one leaving the game for one reason or another. But you got to ask yourself, would they be so blatant? I mean, okay, yeah, they have once or twice done that, which just messes with everyone because it's like, well, they're being so blatant. There's no way they would do that. And that could be this time, too. I just don't think it is. So that basically means that whole preview is worthless if that's the case. Because I think even if they lose the next immunity challenge, I can't imagine both Jessica and Dr. Mike turning on him.
Yeah.
So I would think that Lauren would probably be voted out in that situation. But it seems to me that the most likely tribe to lose will be the same tribe that lost this past week. And that'll, you know, bring us to the question, what does Ryan want to do? Does he want to keep Allie around? I feel like he wants to. And that's kind of where I was leaning earlier. If that's the case, then she should be safe unless she does totally blow up at him. And that takes me back to JP, because at the beginning of the podcast, you were saying, you know, you think they want to keep JP around because of his strength. But I think we're to the point now where they know Emerge is coming soon. And I don't know that they will necessarily view it as important to keep JP around. And it's funny because I was also getting ready to change my thinking on him, though, from a different standpoint. We heard from players and we talked about that, you know, some players say he brings nothing to the table from a strategy game standpoint. But then we also heard some of the smarter players say that, you know, he's malleable, like we talked about. And you mentioned how Chrissy turned him on a dime from wanting to keep Rourke to wanting to vote her out.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be the kind of guy you want to keep around for a little while if you're the one doing the manipulating.
Yeah. But
Ryan probably wants to keep both Chrissy and Allie. Chrissy obviously wants to keep Ryan. Allie certainly doesn't want to get voted out. One solution to this is for all of them to band together and vote out JP so that someone else doesn't get their hands on him and start manipulating him in the wrong way. I think that's what's going to happen here. I'm going to go back and predict JP once again.
I'm going to disagree with you. And here's why. I went through and I was looking at each of the tribes and I picked one individual from each of the tribes that I think would end up getting voted out if that tribe goes to tribal council. Now, that being said, I do think that and now they're yellow, right? I get them all messed up now because we've got healers, hustlers, and now we're back to just colors because I can't remember the names of the tribes. But so I do think that Ryan and Allie and JP and Chrissy are going to be in a tough spot, common immunity challenge, unless it's just all puzzles. If it's all puzzles, it'll be great. But as far as the red tribe is concerned, is that Levu? I don't know.
Oh, don't even ask.
Okay, so the red tribe. if Cole doesn't die or doesn't get medevaced, then I think Cole's sticking around because, yeah, I mean, that preview was so Cole heavy that I can't imagine that they would just want to put it all out there unless he does get medevaced. And then they could be like, well, what else were you going to do with it? I don't know. But I don't see Jessica turning on Cole or Mike turning on Cole. So I do think Lauren is going to be in a tough spot on that tribe. If they go to tribal council, I think Lauren's in a bad place. For the blue tribe, I went through this a lot, and I feel like Joe is in a really bad place because he's clearly the most vocal. He clearly doesn't like Ashley. Ashley and Devin have decided they're going to stay together and they're going to be strong. And I don't think Desi is going to put her neck out there for Joe. So I think that if it comes down to it and Desi has to make a choice, she's going to go with Ashley and Devin and Joe's going to go home if the blue tribe goes to tribal council. But I do think the yellow tribe is probably going to go based on, you know, the abilities of people on the tribe. And I think Allie's going to get voted out. And because I think that Chrissy is going to be smart enough to recognize that JP is someone that she can manipulate and make do things very, very easily. And I think that Chrissy will know how to, she's spent a lot of time with JP and Allie hasn't. And I think Chrissy knows how she can use JP. She's seen his strategic game. And I used air quotes when I said that. she's seen what he can bring to a tribe. And I think Chrissy is going to know how to use JP. And I don't think that Chrissy will pick Allie over JP. And Ryan is going to be in such a bad place because Allie is going to be very upset with him that I think it's going to be really easy for Chrissy to make Ryan realize that Allie doesn't bring anybody to the table. If we get to emerge, there's nobody that Allie is bringing to you. Whereas JP and I are bringing you Ben. Like we've got Ben and then, oh, there's Ashley and Ashley was really close with JP. And so we've got Ashley too. So come emerge, you're going to be in a much more comfortable position if you stick with JP and I, because we bring with us Ben and Ashley. So I think that that's going to be a dilemma that Ryan now finds himself in because of this week's decision. And I think Allie is going to be going home. So that's my prediction.
Yeah, I think you make good points. I'm going to have to start letting you go first.
I really thought about this one because I was so frustrated with what Ryan had done. And I was like, but I think it's bad. I think it's bad.
Yeah, part of it may just be that I would much rather see Allie stay and JP leave.
Yeah.
As far as who gives what to the game, that may bias me somewhat. But, you know, hey, I made my prediction, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I picked Rourke as my winner pick, okay? So, you know. So yeah, it happens. But
all right, so now we have gotten to the point of this podcast where we have wrapped up the past week of American Survivor. So it's time to move on to our special coverage of Australian Survivor 2. Anyone who is still listening who has not seen Australian Survivor 2 yet and wants to remain unspoiled, now is the time to stop this podcast. I will give you a 5-second countdown. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, we are ready to look at the guy who lasted 55 days, built a cookie army, and had two people arguing against their own interests to get to the final two with him. Let's talk about why Jericho won.
Yes. Jericho is so much fun. He's really fun. I really enjoyed Jericho, and the cookie army was fantastic. I have to say that was one of my favorite points and highlights of the show was the cookie army.
Did you see the bow tie he was wearing at the reunion?
Yes.
Cookie Monster.
Yes, it's so appropriate. I love it. It's great.
All right. So we're just going to jump right into this. This will be a shorter version than usual, but, you know, we will hit on the high points, I think. So we'll dive into Rule 1, which, of course, talks about scheming and plotting. And, you know, this season was filled with so many hardcore game players that it was amazing and fun to watch for me.
Oh, it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible how strong so many of the players were. It was really impressive. It was a great season.
Yeah. But none of those people, the super strong ones, the super hardcore ones, ended up in the final four. And I think that's because scheming and plotting doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do so in an ostentatious manner, which Jericho showed us.
And interesting, too, one of Henry pointed out at his in his final remarks at the final tribal council that perhaps you don't need to start scheming and plotting from day one, you know, or playing the game from day one, that you can actually wait and start playing it much later and still do just as well because of the people that you put your you put a big target on your back, I guess, when you start playing so hard, so fast. Like, look at AJ. You know, he definitely was a target right away because people recognized he was playing the game really hard. So
AK. Yeah.
Or AK, I'm sorry. I have to remember all their names. Yes. So AK. Oh, there's so so many. There's what is there, 22 of them or something? There's a lot.
Yeah, something. Yeah. 24. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to disagree with that because I am going to stick by what this rule says, which is that you have to start strategizing from the very beginning. And we found out from interviews that Jericho approached Luke right away when the game began because Sam was moving too quickly and too obviously. That ended up, you know, creating the tightest alliance of the game and one that certainly helped Jericho make it all the way to the end. So you do have to start. You just don't have to do it in such an obvious manner.
Yes. And I should say it in that fashion. You do have to scheme and plot, but you, I think Henry was, Henry recognized that he was going full force and with a vengeance, like right away. And I do think that Jericho was doing it in a much more muted fashion, you know, that he was doing it from the beginning, but it wasn't as extreme. It wasn't as out there. And, you know, people didn't necessarily notice it. And he even explained that in his confessionals, the type of game he was going to play. He was going to present himself in one fashion, but then secretly he was going to be doing things, you know, behind people's backs. So he definitely played from the beginning.
Right, exactly. And, you know, despite the fact that he had this super tight alliance with Luke, that was definitely not the only reason he made it to the end. He was no coattail rider. And Jericho told Nick from the Know-It-Oz that he was going into Survivor. He knew he would have to throw away his real life morals within the game. He made a specific decision to be different in Survivor than in real life, which allowed him to lie and deceive as necessary, which is exactly what he did. And I do think one part of his strategy came out of the moral dilemma with the cookies. You know, when I saw it originally, I thought it was funny. We all laughed, you know, at the cookie army when he was building it. But I have to say it actually worked.
It did, which is fascinating that nobody else told each other about the cookies. Like, I thought it was really incredible that he had like, what did he tell Henry? He had like four cookies and he was allowed to share with one person. So he each got like two cookies. But it was incredible that everyone believed the story that he was providing about these cookies and nobody ended up throwing him under the bus for it. It was really quite impressive.
Right. And, you know, he told Nick in interviews that you have to make the most out of your resources. And he used his resources, his cookies, to attach himself to three allies who would serve as partners, shields, and distractions throughout much of the rest of the game.
Yes, and he picked three individuals who were the perfect shields because they were those individuals that were playing strong and playing hard and kind of in your face as threats to potentially win the game. And those were the people that he chose. So he clearly had a great mindset about him when making those decisions. And the timing of it too was great because it's not like he told everybody at the same time. You know, he told Luke pretty much right away, but then brought in the other two individuals later when he needed to. So he clearly thought through that very well.
Right. And of course that wasn't the only strategy he had going on. I think it's worth noting that he avoided having his name written down all the way until the final four. And he talked about in interviews that one way he did this was to fan the flames whenever he saw problems breaking out between two other people. So, for example, just before tribal council, if he knew two people were kind of on each other's case, he would go to one and tell them something to make them mad at the other person, just to ensure the attention was focused elsewhere and keep that fire burning. And then when he finally did become a target, he managed to convince Tara to let him, well, fan the flames and keep that fire burning for real by going to a tie against Michelle after he sniffed out the fact that there was a plan being plotted against him, which also showed good strategic chops on his part.
That was so amazing to see what should have been in the Survivor world. Like, you're done at that point. I mean, you really are done when you're down to four people and three of them are like, hey, we're going to vote you out. The fact that he managed to convince Tara that she should keep him and how that would benefit her in a final two situation really was a great, great move. And he also knew he could make fire, you know, so he was like, let's do this. And I also have to give him props too, when it got to the situation with when Lockie was going to be voted out. I think I'm trying to remember everything right, but there was a possibility that there could have been a tie and then people were going to have to draw rocks. And Jericho was like, let's do it. Let's draw rocks. Like, I'm here to take risks and I want to do that. And he was very matter of fact about it, which I think would scare anybody, because when you're so matter of fact about it, you start to question, well, geez, they really are okay with going to a tie. So maybe I need to come up with a different strategy or a different idea, because that person doesn't care if we go to rocks. So he really did have a great way of utilizing what should have been or could have been a really bad situation and turning it into a benefit for him.
Right. Absolutely. And I think, you know, to sum up, I think he did a great job when it came to the first rule. As we move on to the second rule, for most of the game, I don't think anybody worried that Jericho was scheming and plotting too much. If anything, I think some players probably figured he didn't do enough of it until they saw who he was up against at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But in final tribal council questioning, Henry suggested the possibility that Jericho had backstabbed too soon in saying that, you know, Jericho had made a mistake by voting him out because you shouldn't get rid of your shields. And, you know, okay, Henry might have a point if you only have one shield.
Right.
But when you're carrying around three of them, at least three of them, you got to drop them at some point.
Yeah.
And Henry happened to be the first one to be dropped. So sorry, Henry, you can't really be mad about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Sarah was miffed that Jericho would dare lie to her and backstab her. So she ended up giving her vote to Tara at the end. But I chalk that up to poor explanation on his part rather than actually scheming and plotting too much. And so we'll get to that, you know, when we get to that part of the rule.
Mm-hmm.
So did you have anything else for the second rule?
No, I think that he did a really good job of really trying to, he made decisions when they needed to be made. And I agree with your assessment with when you have three shields, you have to make a determination as to when each of those shields is going to have to go home, because if you don't want to be sitting in the end with them, you've got to get them voted out. And there was an opportunity for Henry to go home, and so he took that opportunity. I also don't know. I'm trying to remember and I can't remember, but the who is the first? What is his name? His name is escaping me. The first individual on the jury.
Oh, Jared.
Jared. Did Jared end up voting for Jericho?
Yes, I believe the votes against Jericho, or otherwise known as for Tara, although two of them at least were against Jericho, were Peter, Lockie, and Sarah.
Okay, because the only issue that I really could bring up here is in regards to Jared and the underlining component. I don't know if that was necessary, that Jericho needed to underline Jared's name when he voted him out, because you're just kind of pouring salt in the wound. And that's a tricky way to handle the jury, which obviously, you know, we could talk about later, but I don't know. I mean, it didn't affect Jared. He was clearly upset about it in a weird way when he talked to them at the final tribal council, but I don't know if he needed to send a message to Jared that he was the one that voted him out on that night.
Well, come on. Jericho made a promise to underline the name of the vote. He was just sticking with his promise.
I know, but yeah, but then you're really sticking it to the person. So I don't know.
So moving into the third rule, I think Jericho kept himself pretty flexible throughout the game. Yes, he was definitely a super strong ally of Luke, but he also had side alliances around him, such as the Shields we already talked about, Henry and Sarah. And Jericho even told Nick in interviews that he knew he had to be flexible while others were trying to draw up ironclad plans for the future. He recognized that they were trying to make Final Four, Six, and Eight deals way too far ahead of time because you never knew who would be there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he recognized that. And so he just kept himself. I don't think he ever said no to anyone, but he knew that whatever was said there, it could change immediately.
And I think he also was very approachable. So that helped him be flexible because it wasn't like I didn't get the impression that anyone felt they couldn't go and talk to Jericho. He seemed to be almost like one of those people that everybody kind of talked to, which obviously helped him because he would have information and he would be provided information that he probably shouldn't have been told, but it was because he was approachable. And I feel like he made everyone comfortable, you know, and they wanted to work with him in a sense. So I think he did well with that.
Okay. So going to the fourth rule, I think we already talked about how Jericho knew he had to put aside his normal sets of morals and values. And I would say this also included his emotions. This rule specifically notes, you know, reminds you that this is a game. Other players need to be treated like pawns, not potential friends. And yeah, a winner can still be a nice person, as I would say Jericho is, but you can't let that interfere with your plans. And, you know, Jericho seemed to know that no matter how much he might have gotten to know these people, this was a game and he had to win it. So one example that happened late in the season, Lockie took him out snorkeling and they had a great time. It was a great experience for Jericho. But that didn't mean Jericho was suddenly going to change his strategic plan and decide to keep Lockie around.
Yeah, I was really surprised Lockie even thought for a second that was going to do it.
Well, it was Lockie. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, another example was how he reintegrated with the group after they voted out Luke. He didn't throw a hissy fit like some people on this cast might have if, say, their name was, I don't know, Michelle.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, he handled it well, and we saw that contrast in a different Final Four player who did not handle things like that so well.
Well, and even the cookie dilemma, the moral dilemma, you know, where he looked at that, he could have said, wow, that's really, I can't take this jar of cookies over the wood, you know, the firewood, which is such a strange choice. I feel like there's a lot of wood on the island. Why they would make it firewood, but regardless, but he could have allowed himself to be controlled by his emotions in that moment. And he went with being selfish and I want the cookies. This is for me and this is going to help my game. So I think that he did, you know, that was another moment because you saw the juxtaposition between the decision he made and the decision that was made by Tarzan on the other tribe where he did pick the wood and ended up telling his tribe what he had done. So, yeah, I mean, being in control of a decision like that and not basing it on real world emotions and this is horrible that you're going to be hiding this from a group of people and making a decision for the group as opposed to yourself. He clearly didn't let that deter his idea of winning the game.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that moral dilemma and how it was cookies or wood. And it's like, to me, that was the producers just screaming, take the cookies.
Right. Like, why? You know? Why? And it's not even like it's a huge amount of wood. It was, okay, right. I could throw this on one fire. Great. But yeah, I mean, come on, really? I mean, at least the next moral dilemma, they had some blankets, which I'm sure everybody wanted a blanket. But yeah, wood, come on. Come up with
not
a better.
As much as a lolly.
What is a lolly anyway?
Lollies are just Australian word for candy. I mean, think about lollipop.
Right, but they seemed chewy.
That I don't know. I thought that they were all different shape sizes of hard candy.
I don't know.
I'm wrong.
I got to look this up because I was fascinated how quick they were eating these things. If they were hard candies, like I feel like they were chewy. But anyway.
I think we just need to do a fact-finding trip to Australia.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask Rob if he will fund that.
That would be amazing. Rob, we need to research this. We need to. Yeah. Yes. Let's do this.
I'm sure he'll be right on top of that. All right. So moving to the fifth rule. Once again, I think Jericho did a great job of pretending to be nice and playing the social game, probably because Jericho actually is nice and didn't have to do a whole lot of pretending. Besides his strategic plan of keeping around Shields, I think Jericho's social game played a big role in keeping his name out of circulation when it came time to vote. Until the final tribal council, I don't know that anyone ever had a bad word to say about him.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how there were some people that seemed rather angry with him. And I think that that probably happened because he had presented himself in such a nice fashion that, like, Henry gave him a lot of guff because he backstabbed Henry. But that's the game. And so clearly he was putting on a great game face. He was being nice. And people enjoyed him. And then he made the strategic decisions when he needed to. So, yeah, I think that he also recognized that about himself in one of his like first confessionals on the island. I wish I had it in front of me because it was quite hysterical, where I think he even said something about murdering people or something to that effect. It was very aggressive where he said, people are going to think that I'm this nice person and that I come with all of these moral values and that's how I'm going to present myself, when in actuality I'm just going to slit everyone's throats or something like that. It was very aggressive, so I'll have to look that one up. But yeah, so he knew going in that's what he needed to do.
Okay. Going to the sixth rule, which tells players to avoid being seen as a threat. Again, I think he did a good job here. He kept himself low on the threat chart. Even though we saw him doing well in certain types of endurance challenges, he wasn't seen as a big, strong challenge beast like a Lockie or a Henry. So nobody really worried that they had to get rid of him early, despite the fact that so many challenges near the end are based on endurance. I mean, that final challenge really played right into him.
Oh, that final challenge. I would love to have an opportunity to do that final challenge. It is so incredible.
I think you can do it. Just go out in the backyard, stand on a post, and have your kids spray you with the hose every once in a while.
Throw water at me. Yeah. But I mean, and here's what I have to say about the challenges in this season of Australian Survivor. I loved, because there was so many endurance challenges. And when you are out there and you don't have very much food and you're hot and you're uncomfortable and you're not sleeping well, having to do endurance challenges, I think, speaks volumes of your willpower. And it's not just about, can I put a puzzle together? It's about, can I stand here holding this bag above my head that, you know, weighs, I don't even remember how much the sandbags weighed, but, or can I stand here holding a rope on this pyramid shaped piece of, you know, wood? And I mean, like, there were so many endurance challenges. And then that last one is mind blowing. I just really appreciate the way that they do the challenges on Australian Survivor. I mean, I love American Survivor and I love the challenges, but I wish there was more endurance type challenges. I really do. That's my soapbox.
All right. Well, how long can you stand on that soapbox? That's the question.
I don't know. I was an hour and 42 minutes on the one on my season. So.
Okay.
I could stay there for a while, I think.
All right. Like I said, we just got to get people to splash you with cold water.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be quite the same, but I'd have to not be eating very much for like 54 days. You know, there's a lot to it.
Yes, definitely. All right. So we move on to rule 7 and discussion about advantages and idols and the like. Now, I consider the moral dilemma to be an advantage.
Mm.
We've already discussed how he kept it mostly secret, but doled out cookies and various stories about why he was sharing them with certain people. And he did it in a way that was advantageous to his game. He built trust up that lasted for weeks and weeks and weeks. Then he also won another advantage at the final four when he was able to remove one player from the jury. And of course, we know he chose Tessa. Jericho received a bit of criticism for this because Tessa pretty much said she'd never vote for Tara. And then Jericho went to the end with Tara. I can't deny that I felt the same way when Jericho got rid of Tessa. But I think one thing we have to remember is that Jericho didn't know who he'd be up against in the end.
Right.
And so if he felt that it would be a closer vote potentially between him and Pete, if he ended up with Pete at the end, and that Tessa might vote for Pete, then it was, I think, the right move. And per Jericho's interview with Nick, the questioning alone gave him the information he needed to know who to bring to the end.
Yes. And
No, if he couldn't get it his way, then I think it was better to get rid of a possible vote for Pete than a sure vote against Tara.
Yes. And I have to give him serious props for the questions that he asked the jury. They were incredibly well thought out. It was one of those moments where when John said you get to ask three people on the jury questions, I'm assuming that they told Jericho that he was going to be able to do this beforehand, because those questions were so great. He asked acts like questions that I think anyone who would be potentially sitting in a final two or three situation would want to know of the jury. And so, even the jurors were like, wow, that was a great question. You know, and people were like, they were really impressed. And so he took an opportunity that is really kind of uncomfortable. I mean, you're taking someone off of the jury, and that's going to be a big decision. But he used it to his advantage. He asked fantastic questions. His questions really were so remarkable.
And yeah, just to verify, he did tell Nick in the interview that he did, the deep dive, which can be found on the RHAP Survivor Network, that the producers told him, okay, you're going to be asking three questions. Here are the types of questions you can ask. Here are the types you can't ask. Because I wondered, and I figured I knew that the answer was he couldn't, but I wondered why he didn't say, okay, Luke, I have a question for you. Who should I eliminate from the jury? You know?
Right. Yeah, that's true. That is definitely true.
But he was told he couldn't ask questions like that.
Yeah. Well, and it was, I think it was good too, that we didn't even know that that was going to be happening. I mean, we knew that he was going to have a chance to eliminate one member of the jury, but then when they got to tribal council and he was told you can ask three people a question, I thought that was great editing, that we didn't even know that that was going to be coming. So it was, it made it that much more interesting, I think, that there, you didn't see him struggling with that leading up to the actual tribal council.
Right. I agree. All right. So now we move to Appendix A, which of course is known as the weak, strong appendix, but also just generally talks about how you should vote and what you should do as you're moving forward in the game. And the appendix is mostly used while the game is ongoing, but it does also note that in the end, you want to be better thought of than whoever is against you in the finals. Because if the jury sees somebody that they like or respect more than you, well, you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. And Jericho, quite honestly, found himself in the dream situation of choosing between Tara and Pete.
Yeah.
Neither of whom had earned much respect from the jury for their gameplay, though I think he knew they could have had some likability on their side. Jericho told Nick he knew he had to take Tara to the final two because she couldn't speak as well as Peter. Everyone would have in the back of their heads that she had been voted out already early in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And she had no idea what was going on in many tribal councils. So I agree. He was 100% correct to bring Tara to the end.
Yes. And I agree with that entirely. And I got to spend just a few minutes on that whole her getting voted out, but then being allowed to stay in the game. To me, I didn't really like that twist. I understand idols and that you can save somebody with an idol because that's the players controlling the game, because you have someone who has an idol and decides to play it for someone else or decides to play it for themselves and then changes a vote because that person is then not voted out of the game. So that's different when the players are in control of it. But this situation was, you know, all of the tribe walked into tribal council being told you're voting somebody out. Like you're voting, like everyone, you know, they weren't told you're voting someone to go to the other tribe. They were told you're voting somebody out. And so they went into that actual tribal council wanting to vote Tara out of the game. And they did. And then they were told, we have to do it again, which I have to reference how funny it was that they were all announcing that they were voting for Annalise.
Yes,
that was
yes.
beautiful. I loved that moment because they hadn't had a chance to talk. So what a great, great play. And I think it was Ziggy that started that. That was fantastic. So I really appreciated that gameplay. But then to have those people not be out of the game, but just sent to the other tribe, I just feel like that was kind of shitty. Excuse my language. But, you know, it's like that's the players are no longer in control of that. That turns into the production making a determination about how the game is going to play out and keeping two people in the game that were essentially voted out by their tribe, believing that that's what was going to happen. So I wasn't a big fan of that at all. I really wasn't.
Yeah, and I wasn't either. And certainly this is something that has been debated for a number of weeks now since it did happen a while ago. You know, there are some people who say, well, by that point, they should have realized that they were not voting someone out because not necessarily for the Tara vote, but for the Annalise vote, because, I mean, you've got 55 days to fill. If you're sending two out at once, you know, something weird is happening. Mm. But I agree. I think that tribal council itself, the voting is, I'll call it sacrosanct. You know, once you're there, that should be where you vote someone out. You want to do swaps. You want to do something else. Fine. Find another place to do
exactly.
Them.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's our, you know, that's our soapbox right. Together on that one.
Yes.
All right. So now we will move on to Appendix B. And this is the jury phase and final tribal council. Now, in American Survivor, you haven't had a chance to talk about an Appendix B situation yet.
I know.
But in this case, you know, obviously we're looking at it from the end. And once Jericho got to final tribal council, I have to say he did not do the greatest job.
No, I was actually surprised that there was a lot of like animosity towards him.
Right. And I mean, luckily for him against Tara, he didn't have to do the greatest job. But after I heard Nick interview him, I did gain a somewhat better understanding of what happened, because Jericho told Nick that he knew going into final tribal council that the jury was mostly made up of strong players. So he felt he needed to own his game moves and not apologize or appear wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, he catered to his audience in that regard by, well, not catering to them in the form of apologies. And I do think that earned him some respect. But I also think he failed on a couple of fronts. We talked earlier about Sarah voting for Tara, or otherwise known as against Jericho, because she didn't like what he said. And I do think that's kind of a pissy attitude after a 55-day game.
Yes.
And it did lower my opinion of her somewhat. You know, I had been a strong proponent of hers as a good player earlier on. So that kind of knocked her down a few pegs, in my opinion. But it is her choice to make.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that Jericho didn't explain very well what he was trying to say. I think he should have better just gone into the details about how he could be a nice person, but still play a game and do what he needed to do. That just didn't seem to come through in his explanation for her.
Yeah. And he actually, it's so hard, but Tara actually like came out swinging, I think. And she explained herself exceptionally well to a lot of the questions that were posed to her. So I was actually surprised at how well Tara did in that situation versus Jericho, because I thought it was going to kind of be a walk in the park. And Jericho ended up, I felt like the animosity towards him was building as the questions were coming and as things were continuing. And he kept kind of going back to that. He mentioned, you know, the cookie strategy a lot, which was a great thing for him to utilize. But it's like, explain it and kind of move on. And then you got to talk about other things that you did as well. But yeah, he probably would have been better to honor those people that are sitting on the jury and make them understand that you are all incredible threats. And that's why you're all sitting over there. And here was my hand in creating this jury, but you were all going to beat me, kind of thing. You know, it's one of those situations where you have to make them feel like yes, you were such a threat, and that's why I had to take you out, but you have to do it in a different fashion. I don't know if that makes any sense, but in my head it does.
Yeah, yeah, it does. And I think he did that in his answer to Henry. You know, he said, I have your, all of your blood is on my hands.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact details. And I do think, just so you know, in some of the interviews, they said that that final tribal council, apparently some of what he said was chopped up differently.
Oh, really?
So you know where he, this is according to some information that Nick got or that other people saw, that although he did mention the cookie strategy twice, apparently part of one of those was cut from another one and moved to that for better dramatic effect.
Oh, that's terrible.
They have to edit. And
I know.
And I think that probably we were shown Tara's good answers and his not so good answers to build, you know, suspense a little bit.
Oh, I'm sure. I know. I mean, and yeah. I say that because obviously I went through a tribal council like that, and the amount of things that were cut from our questions and the answers that were provided, I mean, it really, because obviously they want their story to keep being generated and they want people to kind of guess who voted for who. And I mean, for example, I actually made Adam cry, and I made Ken and Adam cry with the question that
so mean.
But it wasn't because I was being mean. I was actually like making them be emotional, but that didn't get shown because that would have, you know, I had a relationship with Adam that was never shown. So I can understand them doing that, but moving where answers should have been, I don't know. That's a bit much, but I get it. I understand. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. So in the end, you know, it came down to even losing the Sarah vote and the Peter vote, which I don't know if you heard this, but apparently he lost the Peter vote because when Jericho was voting out Peter, he was singing Ba Ba Black Sheep a little too loudly, and Peter actually heard him.
Stop it. Oh, my word.
So even losing those two votes, Jericho still had plenty to give him the win. So, you know, I think he overall positioned himself, even if he didn't make the greatest arguments or do them in the best way, he positioned himself with a weaker opponent.
Yeah.
Such that he could afford to make those mistakes.
The fact that he was able to use what Tara did to his advantage in that final tribal was nice too, that, you know, with the fire making challenge, that she thought that was going to be seen as a fantastic move on her part because she wanted the more strategic person to be sitting next to her in the end, where he was able to use that to his advantage and say, I convinced her to, you know, have us go to a fire making challenge. Like, I thought that was well done on his part.
Oh, definitely. So, do you have anything else to add about Jericho that we might have missed before I head into conclusions here?
I think overall, Jericho was someone who appeared unassuming. I'm going to use that word again. When the game started, he wasn't a Henry. You know, he wasn't a Lockie. He wasn't a Ziggy, you know, that was really very prominent in both their physical attributes and their strategizing and how they're playing the game. That he was playing a quieter game, but an excellent game from the beginning. And I appreciated the way that he played the game. And I hope he's gained all the weight back, because there was a picture he posted on Twitter. Oh, my word. How small he looks compared to when he walked into the game. But yeah, overall, I think Jericho was he the person, not that I picked a winner. Well, I kind of did. There was a few that I liked, but I think I think it was a great conclusion to a wonderful season, having Jericho win.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think Jericho hid his strategic abilities behind his playfulness and his social game. And with all of the strong players on the season, most of us probably didn't really notice him for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But after his shields fell one by one, Jericho emerged ready to take control of the game. Unlike his final two opponent, Jericho knew what was going on around him almost all the time. And indeed, that's how he managed to convince her to change the plan at the final four. And unlike Michelle, who he beat at that Final Four firemaking challenge, Jericho always kept his emotions under control. I think that Jericho is the type of player who is perfectly suited for the lengthy outing of a 55-day game of Australian Survivor.
Yes.
Those who come on too strong, too soon, they get the boot. If they, you know, try to take too much obvious control, they head out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging back, using shields, waiting for the perfect moment to strike is almost certainly the best way to play this version of the game. And Jericho did it well. He built up his alliances early. He stayed in their shadows. And he was always part of the strategy, but never had a spotlight aimed in his direction until he wanted it there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why Jericho won.
Yeah, congratulations, Jericho. You did a hell of a job.
Yes, definitely. All right. Well, that was a longer podcast than usual, but I hope listeners stayed through it all and enjoyed both the American and Australian portions. This takes us to a hashtag.
I unfortunately could only think of one hashtag, but you've already destroyed that hashtag for me, so I don't even want to say it.
Because okay.
You crushed my butterfly. You crushed my butterfly.
Oh.
That was the only thing I kept coming up with. It was the butterfly effect. But
butterfly. Well, we could do crushed butterfly.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, that's funny.
Not if you're the butterfly.
No, not if you're the butterfly. But what did you come up with?
No, that's it. I think hashtag crushed butterfly.
Okay. Thank you, Stephen Fishback, for the inspiration on that one.
Well, I just like crushing anything that Stephen Fishback
says.
Well,
there you go. So it's the crushed butterfly. Perfect. I love it.
All right. And of course, there's the overall hashtag for this podcast whenever anyone would like to talk to us about it, which is hashtag YXLost. Everyone should make sure to subscribe to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts by going to robhasapodcast.com/survivor. And we are also on the Reality TV Rehapups feed, which is also where you can find all of Nick's very in-depth interviews with the final Australian survivors. In both places, you can also find all the great RHAP content like Know-It-Alls, The Wiggle Room, The B&B, and much more. Also, want to make sure to tell everyone, check out the various blogs at robhasawebsite.com/blog. Listeners can follow Jessica on Twitter at JessicaLewis89. And I am at David Bloomberg on both Twitter and Snapchat, though mostly Twitter.
Yes, you should follow both of us on Twitter. If you're only following David, you should follow me. And if you're only following me, you should follow David.
Absolutely.
That's my rule.
Otherwise, you only get half the story.
That's right. Exactly.
And they don't see when we reply to each other.
I know, which is quite fun.
So thanks again to Will from America for the theme song. And thanks to you, Jessica, for another great and lengthier episode.
Yes.
We will see everyone back here a week from now, and we'll see some of you live in New York in a week and a half.
Excellent. Thanks so much, David.
If you love Survivor and you're feeling down, David Bloomberg will turn it around. He'll break down the rules and he'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. This is why blank lost. Ooh, baby.